Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Listeners, welcome to part two of our episode with Tom Allen, who is the very funny stand-up comedian. He's the host of Bake Off, and he's written a really funny book called No Shame, which is all about his experiences of growing up as a queer kid, really. He's such a funny, radically honest, brilliant person. I'm so looking forward to you hearing the second part. So here it is. You spoke in the book about something I so massively related to that I was just like, and I know that a lot of people listening will, about the sort of body horror of having to get changed swimming.
Oh my God, yeah. And as a small child, I wouldn't let anybody see me naked, which was kind of peculiar, really, it felt. But then I've learned since that there's lots of children like that that felt
yes.
the same.
Why do you think that was?
I think it was a sense of not being comfortable with the world, but not knowing how to express that. And so it came back on me. Mm-hmm. And then I felt just ashamed of being, of my physicality, I suppose. And I'd have these elaborate rituals of getting changed with a towel that took forever. And I'd always be like, oh, come on, for goodness sake, no one's looking at you. It's like, it's not that I think... Oh, especially as he thinks he's got a special one, we can't see it. Like, that's not what I'm saying.
Yes.
All of that stuff. Did you relate to that then?
I really did. And I think that in retrospect, I think that everyone's experience is their own. But I think what was going on for me with that, because I absolutely did not want to be seen naked. I also didn't want to be naked on my own, which I think was the weirdest thing.
Oh, right, yeah.
Is that I remember you saying that as well in the book, that I think I had... on a very low level sort of body horror that I was a boy and I knew that and I was okay with my gender, but my gender did not tally up to what everyone was telling me my gender was. Oh. And actually at a young age, that is a lot of it is quite physical, or the bit that was betraying me was the physical.
That's interesting. Yeah, I've never heard that expressed like that.
And so I didn't like it. I didn't know it. I felt like I often have spoken about feeling like from the neck down, I didn't even relate to my body. I didn't know it was there. I couldn't feel it in the weirdest possible sense. But because this thing was not, it was letting me down in some way, because it wasn't matching the ideas that I was being told of what a boy should be and how a boy should be.
I wonder if that is a big part of it.
But I think it's quite common.
I think it is. It does happen a lot. Like I say, I think several people have said to me about how as children they were the same. And for me, I had this constant fear during primary school because I'd heard these horror stories about when you get to secondary school, you have to shower after PE. And I hated PE anyway, but I knew I had to do it.
God, yeah, awful.
And I'd have to shower after. When I got to secondary school, they said, you do have a shower, but you can wear your swimming trunks. And I was like, and then no one ever did shower anyway. But you know, that sort of like in the film Cares and all of that, where that horrible teacher makes them have cold showers and all that. And I just found it so horrifying. There were later points when I was like, I don't want to do swimming because I seem to be very, I could really, you know, give the game away here. and I've been working very hard to not do that. So I would recite my piano scales in my head to try and distract myself from becoming overexcited about the other boys in my year.
Wow.
Which was so weird, going through like a G major contrary motion to distract from fancying someone in your
class. Well, also, you know, this is what's, you know, part of the queer experience. It's like everyone else here is fucking swimming.
Yeah.
And I'm having an absolute, you know, this is turning me on or whatever. You know, it's like this is in a completely different lane for me than other people. And I think now there is the language for that for kids.
Yeah, I feel like there is the language for that. But also imagine if there was a swimming lane at the swimming pool.
What, for people
fast,
who...
slow, and
attracted to other people
having
in
a difficult
class.
Time. Yeah, having a difficult time. That would be, I think that would be great, actually.
I was always put in the difficult time end. Without the bit that couldn't swim.
Oh, you couldn't swim?
Well, I wasn't very good, I don't think.
One thing I will say, I've always felt like a confident swimmer. But what I wasn't confident about was getting out of the swimming pool. And there weren't steps for everybody. So you had to like clamber out from a position of not having your feet on the floor of the pool. And so clamber out like one knee up on the handrail, whilst the other one sort of tried to get up on the handrail, where the first one tried to get up onto the actual side of the pool all the time, like your cheek trying to grip the actual floor of the swimming pool. And your hand just reaching onto some distant drain, all at the same time while trying not to get some spontaneous boner. And it really was the most ungainly thing. You think, goodness me.
Well, because you sort of had to look athletic getting out of the pool, didn't you?
It's like, how did the other people learn how to do that?
I don't know. I don't know. I feel like I similarly just, I didn't get the software update to be able to do stuff like that. You know what I mean? One thing I wanted to ask you about was you talk about love a lot in the book. You said something about you feeling like there's an extra pressure to be in love.
Yeah, because I think the stories we're told, and this I think is across the board for everybody, is like, well, find a partner, fall in love, then everything will be fine. Then it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And in truth, well, I openly say I have struggled to find, I've struggled to have a relationship like that. For whatever reason, and mainly that I talk too much, but the I think it's a very simplistic narrative of life, and actually, it isn't everything. And you know, people need different things at different points in their life, or you know, and why do we have to conform to this kind of quite heteronormative sense of love? And I find that kind of a little bit annoying, if I'm honest.
Yeah, because also I think there is a thing in LGBTness that is about, it's about a happy ending. It's like, so they've said that.
Oh, I see.
So they've said this thing. They said they are this thing, but it's okay. They've got someone. So
yeah,
it's all safe and sound again. All is restored. And actually, you can be, you don't have to love anyone. You don't have to be with anyone if you don't want to be.
Well, exactly.
There can be quite a heteronormative idea of having to be in love, and you don't feel, oh, I'm not going to put words in your mouth. How do you feel about that?
Do you need to get something out of the tumble dryer?
It's that fucking dishwasher.
They're very needy, actually.
You know, when you're like, you've said it once, I understand, I will be there.
Oh, yeah. My mum's one plays like some sort of like Russian anthem. It's very like, you feel like you should all stand up and be singing something. But, just suddenly your smalls are done. But I do think that there is a pressure in lots of ways to be like, you're not complete until you're in a relationship. And and I sort of, well, I always had the line on stage of, particularly around the stuff to do with marriage equality, which of course I do believe in, but there would always be this thing of like, we want equality. And I'd be like, why do we want to be equal when we could be better? And I do think like, actually, of course it is important that we achieve marriage equality. I get that. Please don't phone in. But the thing is that I think that that there's something quite nice about being, you know, our own version of that. And I kind of like that, I guess, because I had to like it for most of my life, where there wasn't equality. And so you go, well, actually, I'll make what I've got better. Like I say,
equality is choice to do any of the above.
Exactly. Yeah. And I always feel like I'm being kind of scandalous when I say that. So maybe I will outrage people. But I just sort of think, marriage equality is important. But I think it's nice that we can do it on our own terms. We don't have to conform to what straight people have had to do for centuries.
Yeah. It's not like that, because that's becoming a safer version of what you are in the heterosexual eyes, I suppose. Heteronormative eyes.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes, you know, you see people say, I think it probably is unfair of me to say, because I'm not in a relationship, but I've never been in one. That's why I'm saying it. But when you see people go, people should be free to love whoever they choose. And that is true. But like, but it's not just about love. It's also about like fancying someone and being extravagant and exuberant and feeling different and enjoying that and embracing that. And that I feel is very much part of our experience and should be celebrated and enjoyed. And we shouldn't forget that. I suppose that's what I mean.
You said something about in the book about you find or have found yourself being drawn to people who are unattainable because that means you don't have to go through with it. Do you still think that that's real?
Yeah, I think to an extent there's a certain comfort, which I suppose we learn. Well, I learned, you know, there was no way to have a relationship as a teenager for me. I suppose actually the idea of repeating the pattern of falling for people who aren't attainable has a certain comfort about it because it's familiar. And that's horrible, really, and something that I'm working on. But that kind of sense of, yeah, if you go for unattainable people, it'll be safer.
So I'm reminded of Nikki Haslam, who came on this podcast many moons ago, and he said, I think, you know, this was his opinion. He said, I think that sex and spoils it. I want to just behold someone. I want to look at them. I want to be around them, but I don't want to have sex with them. And that's me. And that's my version, which is, you know, that's his choice. And is it that for you? Is it that I don't want to do that, or you just don't feel that you can?
A bit of column A, a bit of column B, I suppose, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose, yeah. Well, I mean, do you, well, I don't know. I wouldn't be this, I wouldn't perhaps want what you described that Nikki Haslam said, but I think there is something, it's the emotional stuff that's the, for me, is the frightening stuff. You know, it's the kind of sense of being in love with somebody is very frightening because it can prove, you know, if it doesn't work out, it can be very hurtful. So,
yeah, but, and I think that you're talking about what is, we're lucky to be living in 2020, that you're talking about one of the many facets of what love and being a person, or who can, being a person, actually, just being a person can be, and they're all valid, and everybody's on their own little, everyone's on their own little journey.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think that, I suppose it in some ways feels quite new for a lot of society, the idea of even being able to explore that and discuss that. But I think fundamentally, human beings have always kind of trodden their own path and done their own thing. I think it's just about embracing that.
Yeah, and love is really scary. And I think, it, you know, even being in love, being, I, you know, the one thing I think people don't talk about is that being in a relationship is, I think sometimes people portray, and you can be complicit in this, portray relationships as places where the communication is great and it's all hunky-dory and you really like each other and you know each other's ticks and you know exactly how each other works sexually and how their mind works and what they're attracted to. That's rubbish. You know, it's actually, it can be as opaque as it can without being in a relationship with someone. And I think that it is an intensely complicated and scary thing, falling in love and being loved. Absolutely. You can get by, particularly as a queer person, I think you can get by on certain versions of love and versions of relationships. So intimacy, you know, you can have long-term relationships when in fact you were never, it was never intimate, because to be intimate is to expose yourself, and you don't want to do that, and you've been taught you shouldn't, you know. So I think that being in love or being in a relationship doesn't mean you solve that problem at all. In some ways you've actually found yourself, in sometimes you've found yourself a band-aid that looks like it on from the outside but isn't it in truth, you know.
Oh, how interesting. I'd never thought of it like that. Yeah, I think there is a simplicity in the way that relationships and love is portrayed that doesn't include any of that kind of complexity. And I think and I think that you know, the grass is always greener or whatever, but I think there's a sense I've always felt of, oh, well, you know, everything will be fine if I was in a relationship. But at the same time, I suppose, as well, I sort of use it as a stick to beat myself with of kind of going, yeah, but other people at least put themselves in a position where they've got the choice, you know, so all that comes out. So never happy. That's what I'm saying. I'm never happy.
Yeah, but, you know, like, fuck, who is? You know, but I think what you can do and what you do is with your stand-up, with your book, with the way you talk to people, is you can just be really, really radically honest about where you're at and have no shame about that and say, this is how I feel, I'm sorry.
Well, I think that's, I hope that's what comes across from the book. And I did try very hard to embrace that throughout it. That, and what I realized is in terms of being a stand-up, say, I think I was, I learned to be good when I learned to actually take the things I felt ashamed of or I felt self-conscious about and flip them and go, actually, here it is. It's right here. I'm not going to hide it. I'm going to show it to you. Yeah. And I think that comes down to, and I know our time together has been sort of focused on talking about things through the lens of being a queer person. But at the same time, I think also class factors into that. And I would say that that's been a sort of intergenerationally as well. You know, and I think that even going back as far as grandparents and beyond, those feelings of not being enough and not being quite, you know, having to put on a show and having to hide parts of yourself and change parts of yourself have had a bearing on me. It's paid forward through the generations, in my opinion. And I think that's, again, another really complex issue that it would be interesting, I think, societally to explore that impact. And I think there's still a lot to be said about that.
You mentioned money in the book and shame around money. And I think that is weirdly one of the last bastions that people will not talk about and will not, you know, there's so much, you know, Martin Lewis, the sort of money expert guy, talks a bit about it. And it's just fascinating, the secrecy and shame around money and money up against a consumer society where we're all supposed to look like we have a ton of stuff and we want more and can get more.
Oh, yeah.
Can get more.
Yeah.
And it feels like, you know, and the conversations I've had, massive conversations I've had with my own family when there's been pinch points about money have been the most cataclysmic in some ways, you know, to talk about stuff that just doesn't get spoken about, you know.
And it's sort of something that sometimes, you know, people have very little control over. No, I'd say most of the time, actually, you know, kind of, and yet we're taught we have to be ashamed about it. And it's horrifying, really, that people aren't allowed to express the vulnerabilities they feel surrounding money. And I know that was something that my parents both had experience of, and I dare say it's been passed on to me as well, the consciousness of not, you know, because it's very, you know, when people say, like, it's important to fail, learn to fail. It's like, it's fine to fail if you've got loads of money. Of course, set up a business, sit, watch it go down the swan. Is it the Swanee? Is that what people say?
Up the Swanee, down the
drain.
Down the drain. Don't know why I said wazoo.
But, you know, like, yeah, fine, fail then. But if you have, you know, if you're trying to build yourself up and trying to do the best you can, you're not going to throw it away on a whim or on a, you know, it makes dreaming so much harder. And I think that, you know what I mean? That's how it impacts different aspects of life. And I realize I say this with my posh voice, but I assure you, I'm not from a posh background. It is.
Well, to fail is a privileged option.
I think so.
And you are reminding me of one last thing I want to say to you.
Oh, no.
There is a beautiful saying that I have pinned on my pin board at home, which is to remind me when I'm doing new things that I'm frightened of, which is, the easily shamed will not learn. And through your book and the beautiful words you put together, you are a constant reminder of that, that you have put yourself out there with your writing, with your stand-up, saying you are who you are. And it's an amazing lesson to learn from.
Oh, well, that is a very, very lovely thing to say. And I'm very heartened by you saying that, because I hope you and other people have enjoyed the book. And I'm very grateful.
What a lovely man. You know, he's so full of wit and humour and kindness and warmth. But actually, as well, what the thing I love about him and I loved about that chat is that He's also really good at being really honest and vulnerable, and there is a really gentle side to him and a reflective side to him. And I'm really pleased he sort of showed that to us, because I think he, in his work and his writing and his stand-up, is always trying to show that it is complicated being a person on planet Earth, and that can mean an LGBTQ plus person, or it can mean anything, or it can mean anything else. So what a lovely chat, what a lovely man. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Please let us know what you think of it. Hello at homosapienspodcast.com. Get in touch on Instagram at Homo Sapiens. Rate and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. If you want to win a t-shirt, a Homo Sapiens t-shirt, go and review us on Apple Podcasts, and we will pick review of the week in our Homo Sapiens Extras episodes. And if you want to buy a t-shirt or a Homo Sapiens sweatshirt, go to everpress.com/Homo Sapiens. It's been a lovely, lovely interview, a lovely chat with Tom Allen. And thank you all for listening. See you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Powered by Spirit Studios.